This is a special report from ABC Radio News.
Our objectives in the war are very, very limited. We want a cessation of this fighting. We do not want to escalate it. We do not want to extend it.
I do hope that the conflict will remain where it is. We have tried to confine it to our defense.
It is the overriding necessity in the face of truly disastrous consequences for both of these great countries and for the world to achieve a halt in fighting.
The news department of the ABC Radio Network presents Kashmir, the Troubled Waters, a special report on the war between India and Pakistan over the territory of Kashmir, with reports from ABC Radio News correspondents in Rawalpindi, Karachi, New Delhi, Jammu in the Kashmir, London, Washington, and New York. In the ABC Radio News headquarters in New York, Don Gardner.
Over the past 20 years, the world has become accustomed to war and the threats of war. Most grow out of the tensions of the Cold War. But at this moment, a hot war is underway in Asia between India and Pakistan, and it is a war with its roots in geography, religion, and religious nationalism. Yet even this war is not and cannot be far removed from the basic division of the world between East and West. The troubled waters of the war in Kashmir are lapping at the shores of the United States, Russia, and Red China. And ABC's James Picton in Karachi says,
"The war that the United States and its Western allies have tried to prevent for the last 18 years has come. Pakistan and India, two of the strongest anti-communist bastions in Asia, are flinging themselves at each other. While not far from the fighting front itself, the Red Chinese sit smiling like carrions, waiting to pick over the ruins when the bitter fighting finally dies down."
Correspondent James Picton reporting from Karachi, the major city of Pakistan, which since the current fighting began between India and Pakistan, has been subjected to air raids every night, although Karachi is a city located many hundreds of miles away from the ground fighting, which is centered on or near Kashmir, an area north of India on the Red Chinese border and a problem for 18 years. For the background, Picton in Karachi.
The story of Kashmir is basically this. When Britain gave independence to India in 1947, the Muslims of West and East Pakistan demanded a separate state. This was easy in most parts of British India, but in two states, Hyderabad and Kashmir, there was a different situation. In Hyderabad, there was a Muslim ruler or Maharaja who wanted to belong to Pakistan and a Hindu population that wanted to belong to India. India took over Hyderabad despite the wishes of the ruler. In Kashmir, there was a Hindu ruler and a Muslim population. In this case, India rejected the wishes of the population, and the Pakistani army marched in. The Indian army resisted. There was a battle, and the United Nations brought about a ceasefire. Later, the United Nations passed a resolution calling for an election in Kashmir, but the Indians have refused, knowing that the people of Kashmir would vote to join Pakistan.
And Picton also says that about a year ago, India began to integrate Kashmir into the rest of India, and the resulting unrest came to a head in August when violence broke out. By the end of August, the war clouds were gathering fast. Indians crossed the ceasefire line to occupy areas which the Indians said were infested with Pakistani infiltrators. Then, on September 8th, ABC's Paul Hermuses reported from New Delhi.
Ground fighting between India and Pakistan spread early today when Indian troops again invaded Pakistan. The action is taking place in the border area between the Indian state of Rajasthan and Pakistan. And the area is about 200 miles east of Pakistan's main port of Karachi, less than 100 miles from the key city of Hyderabad. Airplanes from both sides have carried out raids on military targets and airfields. Last night, the Indians claimed they shot down a Pakistani transport plane, which they said was on a bombing mission over the Indian capital of New Delhi.
And as the fighting over Kashmir became full-scale war, correspondent Hermuses was joined by ABC's Ray Maloney, who reported from Rawalpindi at the front.
The unforgettable and horrible smell of death is in the air. The fighting is too fast to permit burial of the dead. Indian Air Force jets, Russian MiGs, and U.S. Sabres bomb, rocket, and machine gun the roads constantly, sending pluming towers of smoke into the air from burning Pakistani vehicles. The terrifying thing is that there's perilously little time left, if indeed the horror of an all-out war is to be avoided.
It was soon evident from Maloney, Picton, and her muses that this was a big war, and newsmen converged on the new area of crisis. ABC's Bernard Eisman switched from Santo Domingo to Rawalpindi.
Indian dispatches are claiming major victories in the air war with Pakistan. In an airstrike, Indian jets say they knocked out 23 Pakistani tanks being carried by train. In sorties supporting ground troops near the Kashmir line, Indian pilots reported hitting three more tanks and knocking out as many as 30 other Pakistani military vehicles. The Indians admit to losing one Hunter aircraft as a result of Pakistani ground fire. New Delhi says that airstrikes by Pakistani aircraft last night on two towns resulted only in minor damage.
Almost immediately, the fighting between India and Pakistan came before the United Nations Security Council, which had been responsible for the earlier ceasefires, and which for a dozen and a half years tried to keep the lid on the Kashmir situation. It fell to United States Ambassador Arthur Goldberg, the Security Council president for September, to call the UN Security Council into urgent session.
It is essential that there should be an immediate ceasefire, that all armed personnel which have moved across the ceasefire line should be withdrawn.
And as Ambassador Goldberg presided, the UN Security Council heard the Indian delegate.
Ceasefire is a very desirable objective, but it can only come after Pakistan has been condemned as an aggressor, and the Council has instructed the government of Pakistan to withdraw its troops, whether or not they are in uniform, from the Indian state of Jammu and Kashmir.
The Indian government's comments hotly answered by Pakistan's ambassador to the UN.
I strongly and totally repudiate the allegations made by the representative of India. There is not a single statement made by him which is not based on deliberate fiction and cannot be controverted by facts.
Against that background of Pakistani and Indian diplomatic exchanges, grim news from Arthur Goldberg.
The military news from the area, as is well known and has been reported in the world press, continues to be grave. And United Nations observers on the ground have been unable to carry out their functions freely.
The United Nations Security Council called for an end to the fighting and agreed unanimously to send Secretary General U Thant to India and Pakistan to see if he could stop the war. But U Thant was realistic in his expectations.
I have no illusions about this mission. The issues are infinitely complicated and difficult, and the situation out there is extremely grave. Kashmir has posed a baffling problem for the United Nations for 17 years.
The difficulty of the job facing U Thant was summed up by ABC's James Picton in Karachi.
The belief here is that the Indians would be glad to have a ceasefire if the Pakistanis would accept the status quo in Kashmir. But the Pakistanis are stoutly saying they will accept only an election in Kashmir and they will fight on until they get it.
Correspondent Picton and the other Western newsmen trying to cover the war have had a difficult time. There is considerable suspicion on both sides of the battle lines, suspicion of newsmen, many of whom are accused of being spies for one side or the other. Now, one of ABC's men who had a particularly hard time was Ray Maloney. Listen.
Here at this encampment outside Rawalpindi, fierce tribesmen, some of the best fighters in the world, are coming down here on what they themselves proclaim is a jihad. Jihad, a holy war, a holy Muslim war. They're not coming to order, they're just coming down because they want to fight. And fight they will. These are the men who held off the British Army for years. And here they are now with their own homemade weapons. Hello.
What is this?
My tape recorder.
Not a tape recorder.
It is a tape recorder.
That report from Ray Maloney cut off in the middle, and Maloney threatened by suspicious soldiers. Later, Maloney gave voice to his frustrations.
You can't do anything. The explanation, for instance, of the first few bursts of speech on this tape is that out at the Pathan camp, I tried to do
a sound piece for radio. But the tribesmen and some of the senior Pakistani officials insisted that the tape recorder, a ewer, was indeed a radio transmitter, and that I was transmitting information to Delhi as to the whereabouts of this Pathan encampment, and that the bombers would be over and bomb the whole place. As you know, we've been arrested, we've been rocketed, we've been bombed, and everything like that. But the most frustrating thing is that we just don't seem to be able to get any work done.
But the work is getting done under wartime conditions. Bernard Eisman, this week in Jammu in Kashmir, during an air attack.
A second one hit. An off about 12 miles. It appears to be the wreckage of the first Pakistani Sabre jet hit by the ground fire by the anti-aircraft. Down on the ground in a billowing cloud of black smoke coming up over the horizon. The third plane, overhead, now at about 5,000 feet, bracketed by anti-aircraft fire.
Bernard Eisman, ABC, at a refugee camp near Jammu in the Kashmir.
After Eisman left the battle zone at Jammu, he came up on radio circuit from New Delhi, describing what he saw the night before when he was still in Jammu.
At night, the sky is full of red and blue and green and black. It just lights up from a constant pom 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 of British Beaufort's guns indicates to me through my ears that there is none and has been no lull.
Part of the frustration in reporting this war has been the lack of hard news, facts and figures about the scope of the fighting and its effects on the people. Severe damage has been inflicted on towns as tanks and planes went into action. Severe fighting around the town of Chom, while the major target appeared to be the city of Lahore. But the secrecy wraps thrown over the action by authorities on both sides make it hard to know the extent of casualties, military and civilian. Now, this war between two giants of Asia has caused all sorts of headaches for countries not directly involved. The Russians say they want the fighting stopped and support the UN resolutions calling for an end to the war. Moscow offered to negotiate. Radio Moscow said,
both sides, it is stated by the official Soviet news agency TASS, can count on the Soviet Union's good offices should they consider them useful. The Soviet government has expressed apprehension that the tendency towards an extension of the conflict is further heightening the tension created in Asia by United States aggression in Vietnam.
For the British, whose former colonies are now fighting a hands-off attitude, ABC's John Collier says,
Britain has been playing it very cool indeed. All the officials in Whitehall have been keeping very quiet about it, refraining from offering any opinion on India or Pakistan to avoid any accusations from either side that they're favoring either side.
The American involvement, though indirect, has been embarrassing. Both sides in the fighting are using American military hardware provided to them not to fight each other, but to be used in defense against communists. Once those weapons were used on non-communists, the United States acted quickly. As Secretary of State Dean Rusk told ABC,
we have suspended military aid to India and Pakistan as a part of our general policy of throwing our full weight behind the United Nations Security Council and the efforts of the Secretary General.
Now, Secretary of State Rusk was interviewed on Capitol Hill last week at the beginning of the crisis when Russia and the United States stood together in calling for peace between India and Pakistan. And ABC's John Scali had a question about that unusual lineup.
Do you think Soviet leaders can play any useful role, Mr. Secretary, in helping bring an end to the fighting between India and Kashmir?
Yes, I hope that the Soviet Union will continue to throw its full weight behind the effort of the Security Council, not only by its stated attitude in the Security Council, where everyone, as you know, was unanimous, but also by cautioning moderation and restraint in the two capitals. We understand they're doing that, as we and others are doing. And I hope very much that the two parties will take all of that fully into account.
And Secretary Rusk had some thoughts about one big Asian power which could only gain from a big war between India and Pakistan. Of Red China, Secretary Rusk said,
there are those who feel that China is trying to fish in troubled waters here. Our own advice to Peiping would be to not to do that and to stay out of it and give the Security Council of the United Nations a chance to settle this matter.
The Chinese, as Dean Rusk said, are interested in the troubled waters of Kashmir and are lending vocal support to the Pakistanis. Radio Peking broadcast a message of that support It was monitored by ABC's West Coast Listening Post. Listen carefully.
The Chinese government is deeply convinced that with the sympathy and support of the 27 countries and peoples of Asia and the whole world, the 100 million people of Pakistan will rise as one man to save their country and finally drive back the Indian aggressors.
The specter of Red China haunts the crisis over Kashmir, as the Peking government threatens India with grave consequences if Indian fortifications are not removed from the India-Chinese border, a threat that has raised the possibility of yet another armed clash along India's borders and which the United States takes seriously. India's ambassador to Washington, B.K. Nehru, spoke of the Chinese.
It's very difficult to prophesy when this war will end, how it will end, whose forces will remain where. All that I can say is that if we do, if all the defense forces of India disappear in this war, but I would like to add that if that is most unlikely, then the Chinese will be in a better position to attack us than they are now.
Ambassador Nehru expressed not just concern over Red China, but some bitterness over the fact that Indian forces are being fired upon with American military equipment. As Nehru said,
the most important items of the armament supplied under the military aid program, and which has been used against us from the very first day of the uniformed invasion, consists of Patton tanks, mobile artillery, supersonic aircraft, and air-to-air missiles. Their use constituted a major escalation of the war.
That indirect American involvement in the war has been very much on the minds of the American policymakers in Washington. And the general U.S. policy has been to leave the crisis in the hands of the United Nations. With the Soviet Union going along with the U.N. role, the United States feels that the full weight of the U.N. can be put to use with better effect than a single-handed American intervention on the diplomatic level, despite a request for U.S. mediation from Pakistan President Ayub Khan. Now, last week, Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield summed up the president's attitude toward the U.N. role in a settlement.
He expressed his great concern and his hope that the United Nations would be able to do something to help bring about a settlement of this most serious situation.
That Mansfield comment on the president's attitude prompted a question from Republican Senator Everett Dirksen.
Suppose the United Nations falls down, and suppose this becomes the crucible out of which World War III can be spawned, and you get no action out of UN, then what?
But despite Dirksen's question, the president kept to his view that the UN is the proper agency for mediating peace. On Wednesday of this week, Senator Mansfield again reported on the president's feelings.
The president has emphasized to us that he would like to see the United Nations, through its secretary, Utant, do what it could to bring about a settlement of this most delicate, difficult, and dangerous situation to the end that peace can be restored between Pakistan and India in this huge area, which is so important not only to them, but to the peace of the world as well.
The United States caught on the horns of a dilemma as war rages between two friendly countries, both using an ample supply of American military hardware. Complicating the dilemma, the rare diplomatic alliance with Russia at the UN, as the two giants of the Cold War stand together in hopes of keeping a war of religious nationalism from fanning the flames of the Cold War. And on the sidelines, the Red Chinese, mindful of the prospects of a devastating war between Pakistan and India, with Peking counting on being the winner. In this day and age, it is impossible for a regional conflict to break out without its having sweeping international echoes, as when a pebble is dropped in calm water, the ripples fan out, touching every shore, from the banks of the Potomac to the shores of the Moscow River and to the edges of the China Sea. Everyone but Red China hopes that someone, probably the UN, can pour oil on those troubled waters. But Secretary General Thant told the UN Security Council that he was unable to get the Indian and Pakistan governments to agree to a ceasefire. He warned that the situation is so grave that it threatens world peace. Thant suggested what the UN Security Council could do.
It could order the two governments concerned, pursuant to Article 40 of the Charter of the United Nations, to desist from further hostile military action. And to this end, to issue ceasefire orders to their military forces.
And there, after 18 years of crisis, stands the situation in Kashmir. Pakistan demanding elections, India acting to counter what it considers Pakistan aggression, the rest of the world yearning for a settlement except for the Red Chinese, who see in Kashmir the opportunity for Red Chinese gains. The Pakistan position, stated by Foreign Minister Ali Bhutto.
Agreement must take into account the wishes of the people of Kashmir. We do not covet any territory. We have no territorial ambition. We are a peace-loving people, and all that we ask the world is to accept this position that the people must decide their future.
The Indian position, stated by Prime Minister Shastri.
Well, we do not want to extend the conflict. What shape things take will depend entirely on the level to which the government of Pakistan pursue their policy of escalation of the conflict.
And the man who has been carrying with him the hopes of the United Nations, Secretary General U Thant.
Even if an end to the fighting has not yet been achieved, there is no reason for any relaxation of all efforts to achieve it.
The days that lie ahead will be the time of testing to see whether the United Nations can bring the weight of world opinion to bear on India and Pakistan, to see if the cutback in aid to both sides will silence the guns, to see if a new ceasefire can be invoked. All of this as the voice of Peking comes up like thunder out of China across the Himalayas. The stakes are high. For India and Pakistan, a question of war or peace. For the West, the risk that there may be a breach in the wall of containment which has held back communism. For the UN, a test of its ability to restore the peace and keep it. For the United States and Russia, what to do about the threat of even greater trouble from the Chinese communists. And for Kashmir, the question may ultimately be not one of life under India or Pakistan, but whether there is to be life at all. And for all of us, there is the sobering lesson of history that regional wars reach out to the far corners of the world, and in this age of overkill, that must be avoided. That is the essence of the crisis in Kashmir, and why someone must do something to calm these troubled waters.
The news department of the ABC Radio Network has presented Kashmir, the Troubled Waters, a special report on the India-Pakistan War with ABC Newsman Don Gardner and ABC Newsmen Bernard Eisman, James Picton, Ray Maloney, and Paul Hermuses at the crisis centers in India, Pakistan, and Kashmir, John Collier in London, and John Scally in Washington. Executive producer Nicholas George. Written and produced by H. Paul Jeffers. Directed by Dennis J. Dennehy. Audio engineering by Neil Paltz, Marty Folia, and Charles Rapp. This is Fred Foy, speaking for ABC Radio News.